Welcome to Cardicast, a glam podcast brought to you by New Cardigan. If you'd like to become a member of New Cardigan, head to our website at newcardigan.org, and if you're able to do so, please consider making a donation after you've joined. We do run entirely on volunteers, so anything you can do helps us to keep the servers working and the Cardies partying. And you know we Cardies like to party. Our February Melbourne Cardi Party was held at ACCA, the Australian Centre for Contemporary Art, with senior curator Annika Christensen taking us on a special tour of the exhibition Unfinished Business: Perspectives on Art and Feminism. Annika concentrated her discussion on a number of key artworks in the exhibition.
Hi everyone, I'm Nick McGrath and this is Justine Hannah. We're Cardi Core, we call ourselves Cardi Core. I always feel weird saying that. We're here today, fortunate enough to have Annika, who's one of the curators of this exhibition. We were having Annabelle, who was the program curator, is that right? Or public programs curator. But luckily, Annika is here for us today. I'm not going to say too much because we've got a lot to see, so I'll hand over to Annika. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Welcome to ACCA. My name is Annika Christensen, and I'm senior curator here at ACCA. Have many of you been here before? Yeah, so you know the deal. We're a sort of small to medium arts organisation. Unlike something like the NGV, we're not a collecting institution, so our focus is really on commissioning new works and presenting temporary exhibitions. So we do 4 shows a year, and they roughly follow the format of solo Australian artist, and then a thematic group show, and then solo international artist, and then at the end of the year, we have a big picture exhibition, which is what this show is, and it's following on for an exhibition that we did last year called Sovereignty, which focused on Indigenous practices from artists from Southeast Australia. So this time we're looking at feminism. Sorry about the hairdryer, it goes off every 5 minutes. And the acoustics in here are a nightmare. So if you need me to repeat anything, or also if you have questions at any point, just chime in too. So yeah, so we're focusing here on feminism. It's a show that's been sort of really 1 year in the making. So 2 years in thinking, but 1 year kind of, tirelessly sort of getting everything together. And it's been conceived of by a curatorium of 6 curators. So ACCA's artistic director, Max Delaney, and myself, and then external curators, including Julie Ewington, who is a sort of eminent curator who has had a long engagement with feminist practices. Paola Bella, who is an Indigenous curator who worked with Max on Sovereignty. Elvis Richardson, who is an artist and the founding member of Countess, which you might be aware of. It's a sort of research platform that counts the representation of female artists in exhibitions or publications pertaining to exhibitions. And then Vicky McInnes, who is at the VCA and who is doing a PhD in feminism and the archive. So there were 6 kind of core curators putting the show together, and then we also invited an additional 4 curators to contribute to the film program, which is embedded in the show. So we're really sort of hoping that the show is intergenerational in its focus and, you know, crossing cultures and different concerns. It's polyvocal not only in the way that it's been put together, but also in, hopefully, the concerns that it brings into the exhibition. So it's very much acknowledging that the show in itself is unfinished business. Feminism is ongoing. It's, you know, you cannot possibly put something conclusive together in a show like this. It's hopefully a start of an ongoing conversation, and that conversation does still need to be being had. And obviously it's quite a timely moment. We couldn't have foreseen just how timely it was going to be. So the show really was put together with the intention of being a celebration of the breadth of feminist practice by Australian artists in Australia, so acknowledging the contributions that they've made not only to art history but to broader social, political kind of conversations in society. But it was also to acknowledge the under-recognition of those practices, typically from what has been and sometimes continues to be a fairly male-dominated art world. So a project like Elvis's Countess and like Natty Solo, who does the hairdryers here, has really focused specifically on things like the NGV, counting how many female artists are shown versus male artists. But the show also, I guess, brings in broader concerns than just the art world. So concerns that relate to the everyday experience of being female or identifying as a female. So yeah, it was a big undertaking, being kind of conceived together. Essentially, we just all brought artists' names to the table. It was a really interesting process. I think all of us learnt a lot along the way from each other and from the artists that we were working with. And from there, we had the hard task of kind of getting it down to what actually is about 90 artists, if you include all the artists in the film program and the artists who will be doing public programs as well as performances throughout the exhibition. I think the show, for me, the way that I describe it is that it doesn't have one kind of curatorial concern, just as feminism as a movement doesn't have one primary concern. So I spoke a little bit about that polyvocal nature. And it really, I kind of think of it as an arena. So sometimes the works are kind of you know, crossing over in their concerns, but sometimes they're also in direct argument with one another as well. It's acknowledging that feminism is inherently contradictory, that the definition really means a different thing to every person who uses it, that it's still contested, that it does have flaws, but also that it does offer us a language that can be helpful in kind of talking about ongoing inequality or gender inequality specifically. But I would say if there is sort of one continuing thread, it's possibly the use of language. So right, the first work that you see when you walk through those front doors are these FEMO posters. So they're posters that have been made by Elvis Richardson and Virginia Fraser. And they're fictional magazine covers that sort of speak to some of Elvis's ongoing interests, which is pointing out gender discrimination in the art world specifically. So they're right in the entrance. And then we have Linda DeMent's Feminist Methodology Machine, which is these three screens here. And they're sort of offering a manifesto for how you might, you know, adopt a feminist methodology in the way that you live your daily life. So Linda has been quite closely associated with cyberfeminism in the 90s. She's been working in computing arts since the 80s. So it's sort of kind of, she's quite sort of punk and out there in her approach and her methodology. Natty Solo, that work there with the hairdryers. So you might know Nat through her blog, Natty Solo, which she really started because she was sort of dismayed that she couldn't get art shows, essentially. So she used to be part of a collaborative practice, Nat and Ali. When they disbanded, Nat was continuing her art practice, but just not getting shows. So she started this blog just as a way of kind of self-publishing and getting her voice out there. But her work always has a kind of interest in language as well. So this work is called Hot Air, which of course has a double meaning. It's literally the hot air that's blown from the hairdryers, but it's also a kind of reference to the rhetoric that comes out of usually male politicians or commentators' mouths. The form itself is referencing a work by Maurizio Cattelan, who many of you may know. He's sort of like that kind of, you know, huge star male artist. And this is an image that he has that repeats on his Instagram account. So Nat's kind of appropriated it for her purposes here. But also, of course, points to the beauty myth, the way that women are still beholden to the mirror, the kind of pressures that are put on females' bodies to conform or otherwise. And then the other work that we have here in the foyer is again looking at language, but particularly through set technology. So it's a work by Giselle Stanborough, who's a young artist from Sydney. She's really interested in sort of technology. So one of the interesting things that we said to each artist that we met along the way, we asked them two questions. So we said, what is the unfinished business for you? And also, if there was another artist that you could point to in Australia who you would say is canonical or, you know, that we really need to consider, who would that be? And Giselle pointed to Linda DeMent, and Linda DeMent pointed to Kelly Dolly, who's this first work here. But Giselle's really interested, I guess, in using technology as a platform or the medium for her art. So she's done work on Instagram, she's done work on Snapchat. And this one is really looking at dating and the kind of, I guess, the, you know, aestheticization or feminization of women on dating platforms. She's also interested in kind of bad TV, like romance, you know, The Bachelor and that kind of stuff, and how art in those kind of ways is used as a novelty. So often there's like a date that people might go on and they have to do life drawing together. And for the general public, that's just a funny thing that people might do as a kind of novelty gesture. So she's looking at hosting a series of dates here at the art gallery. And these are dates that are open to anyone, but she's also open to them having like a real life outcome. So you can log on to Tinder or you can log onto her website, you book a date, you meet her here at the gallery. She'll give you a tour of the exhibition. So it's another way of kind of engaging through, you know, with feminism through one of the artists in the exhibition's eyes, and then who knows where it will lead in the end. So you'll see that this use of language kind of trickles throughout the show. Often artists are appropriating words that have been typically thrown towards women in a derogatory way and reclaiming them as a gesture of defiance, or it's also a way of kind of making space for these voices to be heard. So publishing, speaking, language, printing, they're also kind of ongoing ideas. So we'll talk through the works in the show. I probably won't speak to everything. There are a lot of works in the exhibition. A lot of them require time to really sort of get an in-depth kind of look at. So I'd encourage you to either stay if you can or to come back later if you can. At 2 o'clock, we have a group who are going to be doing a talk in the gallery that is addressing some of the kind of blind spots, the aspirations and the shortcomings of feminism, essentially, looking at sort of what early waves of feminism might have neglected to consider. So that will be a really interesting discussion as well. But feel free, please, to ask me questions at any point, and we can go from there. So we might just start here at the entrance to the exhibition with this work here by Kelly Dolly. Kelly is an artist based in Sydney, and she's also part of a performance art collective called Barbara Cleveland as well. So even within their collective, they have a strong interest in art history and feminist history, which is something that Kelly continues in her independent practice as well. This is a work of 95 hand-painted posters, so they're shown in two hangs. So half of them are here, and then on Monday we're going to do a swap and the second hang will be hung. And a work kind of came out of a 2012 project that Kelly did called Things Learnt About Feminism, where she asked a group of women from very different backgrounds to come and to teach her what their understanding of feminism was. So she's appropriated some of their lessons and some of their slogans into these posters, which are referencing, of course, political postering and sort of activism and feminism that had gone hand in hand since, you know, time immemorial, but particularly in second wave and third wave feminisms. And one of the reasons for having it immediately up the front is that it kind of speaks very directly to that polyvocal nature of feminism that I mentioned before. So several artists in the show have used their chance to show work as a way of also opening up to the voices of other women, including them too. It also acknowledges that it is that feminism as a movement is flawed and that it is open to contradiction. So there's a poster somewhere that literally says yes to contradictions. So it's about embracing uncertainty and kind of acknowledging that everyone has a different perspective and being open to each other's perspectives in order to kind of move forward and to understand some of the shortcomings of earlier waves and to consider what we've neglected and what we still need to consider. There's a work just behind you here, which is pretty intriguing work by a Melbourne-based artist, Sophie Takat, which is actually a cast of the interior of her vagina. So it's interestingly quite a phallic object and it's very curiously made. So the artist has sort of filled her own vagina with dental moulding solution, which then gets turned into essentially a bronze cast. And of course it's referencing kind of Freudian ideas of lack or of penis envy, but here sculpturally it's literally making positive from what is a negative space, not metaphorically, but literally. And there is a second version of this as well that you can hold. So we don't keep it on public display, but it's something that every now and then, particularly our education classes for kids and what might bring out. And it's really interesting because it's quite confronting, you know, like when I first met the artist, we were discussing the work and she was like, here, hold this. And it is like a moment of like, oh, okay. But it's an amazingly weighty object, literally and sort of, I guess, symbolically as well. And then a work here, which is another work by Nat Thomas of the Hair Dryers in the Foyer fame. And it's a work called Man Cleaning Up. And essentially it's playing with the idea of unseen labour, so the work that women have done to clean up after men that's maybe not acknowledged, but also again a play, so man cleaning up, like cleaning up, you know, in the professional stakes or in the, you know, financially. So it's a performance where Nat's put a call out here, so she's asking for a very specific kind of man. So the first one is, are you a white man born to a privilege you didn't ask for? And then it goes on and on and on, and she invites you to book in and do like a half an hour slot of cleaning the gallery floors on your hands and knees while wearing this high-vis vest. It's intentionally quite controversial. It's setting gender up as binary, so there has been, you know, some criticism of that, but, you know, lots of different people have booked into it. So the first person who did was Adam Bant of the Greens. So on the opening night, he was here wearing his high-vis vest. It's quite humorous, you know, it's really sort of saying, like, if you feel like you're the kind of man that is sort of maybe finding it hard to contribute to these narratives, or you feel like you can't do anything about it, like something superficial and symbolic that you can do is booking for half an hour to help clean. So yeah, that happens sometimes on, I think, Saturdays if you're popping by again. So in here we sort of enter what I referred to before as an arena. So the works are really addressing a very wide set of concerns. Sometimes they speak to one or another across the room, and sometimes they are directly in opposition to one another. Right early on, you see a work here by Frances Spudden Phoenix, who sadly died last year in the making of the exhibition, who was sort of very strongly involved in second and third waves of feminism and had had a close relationship with Julie Ewington, one of our curators, for a very long time. So Frances's work, while now it can be kind of critiqued for its essentialism, was really coming out of a time when a lot of feminist practice was looking at central core imagery, which is sort of looking at the vagina, the invisibility of the vagina, and also a critique of other forms of feminist practice. So there's one, we've got the plinth here that has some of her works, and one of the works is a direct critique of Judy Chicago's The Dinner Party. So Frances had worked with Judy on the making of that work and put a publication together that's slightly critical of that practice as well. So she'd had an important presence in Australian feminism for a long time. It's situated next to Fiona Foley's work here, Black Velvet, which again references that image of a vagina, which is here on Dilly Bags. So Fiona is an Indigenous artist, and this work is specifically looking at the sexualisation of Black Aboriginal women in a derogatory way. So again, I think that's kind of talking to Sophie Takacs's work as well, and to Elizabeth Pulley's work, which is a little bit more open-ended. Elizabeth comes out of a painting practice, but is also very interested in the relationship between art and craft and the sort of blurry lines there. But a lot of her work has sort of, I guess, like central core imagery embedded within it as well. These works here, paintings by Linda Maranon, who is an artist who since the 1980s has been making work in painting and sculpture. And for me, actually, this work, Sorry, is one of my favourite pieces in the exhibition, I think, because it's just quietly apologetic. It's ambiguous what the sorry is about. It could be about an error in the painting, so you can see that she's hastily kind of painted over something and then just written sorry and then exhibited it anyway. It's been suggested that at the time that the work was made, which was in the 1980s, it might also have been an apology for, like, painting, which was kind of going out of fashion at that time. But I like to think of it as a sort of, you know, women kind of also taking the blame for others and being apologetic for behaving in a way that possibly isn't accepted of a woman. So there's another work by Kate Just over here, which is a neon light that just says furious. So the sorry is kind of in a counterpoint to that, you know, acknowledging that we can be angry, we should be angry actually, because anger brings about change, but at the same time, society is not okay with us being angry, so we're still sorry at the end of the day. So it's kind of just a nice quiet moment that I think speaks broadly to a fairly universal experience. These works here you will need to spend a little bit of time with. They're a work by Alex Martinez Rowe, and this is just one example of works in the show that really references a form of intergenerational knowledge and exchange. So one of the things that we were considering in the making of the exhibition was a passing of a baton from one generation to another, so not necessarily just older generations to younger generations, but how older generations can learn from younger generations. So the way that I think about it is the show considers, you know, what are the concerns from second and third wave feminism that are ongoing, but crucially, what new questions have arisen. So Alex's work is referencing a strike that happened at Sydney University in the philosophy department, and looking also at a group of feminist filmmakers in Sydney, several of whom have, so Helen Grace is one, several of whom have work in the film program. Helen Grace actually curated a decade's worth of film in there. So there's lots of nice examples of works that reference the work of other artists in the exhibition as well. So this work here, this collection of two cyanotype prints, the floor-based sculpture and the takeaway printout on the shelf here, is a work by Spence Messai, who is a Sydney-based artist. And this work was really important to include because one of the kind of blind spots that we did identify was the exclusion of trans women or people who identify as non-binary within second and third wave feminisms. So the work is kind of quite clinical in its aesthetic, which is a reference to sort of doctor's surgeries, the times that Spence has sat waiting for treatment in one way or another. The work is literally folded or bent as in a state of transition. It's called the look back, which kind of references the sort of double, you know, the looking twice that Spence experiences on the street as they're walking down the street and people are trying to make sense of their ambiguous presentation of a gender, but also looking back at themselves in the way that they've transitioned from one gender that was identifiable to their current non-binary identity. So it's quite a poetic, moving work that speaks to that experience. And there's a takeaway text as well, which I encourage you to take and read further. It speaks as well to these bank of TVs here, which are kind of mainly works by younger artists that do deal with more sort of intersectional concerns. So looking at the way that feminism might intersect with ideas of class, race, sexuality, or understanding of a gendered identity. These two works here are works which, again, bring in that idea of language. And I think I mentioned that specifically some of the works took words that had been kind of derogatory or levelled against women in a negative way and fully reclaimed them and embraced those. So this work by Ruth O'Leary is one such example of these. So she's got a collection here of fuck dresses. So they're kind of, you know, quite emphatically saying, you know, fuck the establishment, fuck power, fuck success, fuck curators appears somewhere. But she's also presented herself wearing them. So these are all, you know, items that she's worn or her friends have worn out as well. And here, this one leaning against a cop car quite defiantly. This work here was a new commission for the exhibition by Sarah Goffman, who's a Sydney-based artist. And this work kind of comes out of an earlier work that Sarah made that was in response to the Occupy movement a couple of years ago. But this one is, of course, referencing the Women's March that happened in early 2017 after Trump's inauguration. So as with Kelly Dawley's work, this is an example of a work that brings in the voices and concerns of other women. So Sarah's kind of voice here is actually completely absent in and of herself. She's taken actual existing placards and just copied out their messages onto these pieces of cardboard here. So it's great in that it brings in some of the humour and the creativity of the women who'd made these placards, and they really were incredible placards. I'm sure that most of you are aware of them, but just aesthetically and in the kinds of messages that they carried, and they were pretty. It was a pretty incredible moment, I think, in history. And I really love this work because every time you look at it, you see something new. Here we have a work called The Round Table, which is a work that's been made by Emily Floyd, the artist, and Mary Featherston, who was a furniture designer. So together with Grant Featherston, her late husband, they had Featherston Furniture, was a kind of iconic Australian design. And the work here, is its form references the cover of a 1977 newsletter called Ripple, which was a newsletter that advocated for radical childcare. So looking at the way that women could kind of band together to creatively look after their kids together while some of them could go back to work. And Emily's mother, Frances, and Mary Featherston were heavily involved in that kind of group. And so Mary had actually designed this cover for this 1977 newsletter, and now it's been kind of reinterpreted as a group or a gathering space here. The title, The Round Table, references like the kitchen table of feminism, so the way that people would kind of get together indoors to kind of create newsletters or political posters or to plot revolutions from home. And here it's conceived of as a discursive space that's really open for other people to book in. So again, it's another way of getting different voices into the exhibition, different concerns into the exhibition. So groups could book in. So yesterday we had an eco-feminist reading group come in and have a book club together. Today we have a group who's looking at, as I said, some of the aspirations and shortcomings of feminism. So it's a really great way of kind of getting different conversations into the mix that the public can then join in with as well. I might just speak to this towering stack of books over here as well, which is a work by Ali Baker. So Ali is an Indigenous artist from Adelaide who is part of a collective called Unbound Collective. So Ali is one member of that collective, and Natalie Harkin, whose work on the video over there, is the other one. But Ali's work here is a work called Racist Texts. And as you can see, it's like a towering stack of books that go floor to ceiling, a seemingly endless column. Quite an uncomfortable, teetering presence. I think it makes you feel quite ill in just physically being under it. It feels precarious, but also content-wise as well, it's intended to make you feel uncomfortable. So these are a collection of books that Ali has been collecting over the course of this year that she has deemed have racist content. So that might be books that explicitly paint Aboriginal Australians in a negative light, or they might be completely absent from records of Australian history. So some of them are titles that you also may well know. You know, May Gibbs' Snuggle Pot and Cuddle Pie is in there. But then some of them are kind of, you know, much more over in their messaging. And the work is really a nice companion piece to Natalie Harkin's video work over here, which I encourage you all to listen to because it's a poem. So Natalie is a writer, and this work is basically a poem that she's conceived of by cutting up fragments of two letters by her grandmother and her great-grandmother and weaving them into a basket together. So Natalie's grandmother was taken from her great-grandmother, and the letters from her great-grandmother are writing to the authorities to beg for her daughter back. So they're sort of saying, I will clean, I will be good, you know, like sort of just trying to prove that they. I think like that sort of, we were talking about bleach a lot in the making of this work, and this idea of like just trying to prove that you'd scrubbed the house and you'd clean the dishes to get your child back is quite heartbreaking. And the letters from her grandmother were to her great-grandmother that never reached her. So they were intercepted by authorities and the two didn't have any communication. So Natalie has kind of woven them back together into this poem. It's quite heartbreaking, quite moving. So I encourage you to have a listen to that one. This work here at the backdrop here, which is kind of, you know, overshadowing the exhibition, is a work by Maria Kozik. So Maria Kozik made this billboard in 1990, and it was exhibited in public space in Sydney and then in Melbourne in 1991. So the response has been really interesting because a lot of people remember it. You know, they remember seeing it in public space. So again, it's sort of looking at a label that has been thrown at women, but reclaiming it in quite a positive way. It's also talking about media representations of women. So a lot of the works kind of look at the way that women are portrayed in film and television and popular culture, but she's sort of reasserted that. So it's kind of borrowing the visual language of advertising. So, you know, in the way that you might see a movie star's name is and the character. So Maria Kozik is bitch. but she's kind of quite defiant in her sexuality. She's really returning your gaze. She's got a little group of plastic men under her belt and obviously clamped down in her arm here. So it's kind of quite a powerful work that's had a really interesting history as well. I'll just talk quickly as well about these works, which are work by an Australian artist of Turkish descent called Çiğdem Ademir. And Çiğdem has sort of a primarily performative practice. She's actually got a work coming up in the Festival of Live Arts in March. But she's really interested in the politics of dress, specifically the veil. So this work here looks at the veil as a site of freedom and constraint. It's quite playful and humorous. So the top work is called Stroll, where she's walking through the streets of inner Sydney with a burqa over herself and an umbrella. So just looking at the way that people interact with her as she walks down the street. The second is called Ride, which she's covered a tuk-tuk and people can hop in and have rides with her. And the last one, the bottom one, is my favourite. It's called Swing. So she's covered the entire apparatus and it just is a complete exercise in total freedom. It just looks completely joyful and uninhibited. The work that she's making for Fola is quite an interesting endurance work. It's essentially her playing tennis against an automatic ball machine that is going to be synced to the internet. So every time the word terrorist appears on Twitter, a ball is fired at her. This performance goes for 8 hours. She's anticipating that it will be every 15 seconds that a ball is fired at her. So I think it's happening on the 24th of March and it sounds incredible. So I encourage you all to go along to that one. So in this room here, we have a selection of works that really sort of deal with printed matter, archives, postering, publications. Behind me in this room here is the film program that I mentioned. So it covers 4 decades, 5 works from each decade. So I won't talk about all the works in this room, but we'll talk about some of them. Most of the posters have come from collections, so there might be Jill posters, which is around the corner, which is a play on Bill posters, who were active in making political posters sort of in the 80s. These ones here are from Cross Art Projects in Sydney, which was a recent project a lot of feminist artists did in correspondence with communities. So it's looking at the way that kind of activism has influenced aesthetics and how feminism and society have been kind of, politics have been intrinsically entwined. But I will talk about this work here, just behind you, which is a work by Vivian Binns. So Viv, I don't know if you know Viv, but she's had a long, very important presence in Australian art practice. So she's been a painter, but also done quite a lot of work in communities. So this work here, these postcards, is a work called Mother's Memories, Other's Memories. And it was a work that she made with communities in Blacktown, so going through their archives. And it speaks to like collaborative practice, which was really important in earlier waves of feminism. Interestingly, there isn't that much collaborative practice in the show. There are, of course, a few examples, but it really was a strong kind of way that women would make work together. But it's this work here that I did want to talk about, which is a reproduction of a 1967 painting that Viv made called Vag Dens, which is in the collection of the National Gallery in Canberra. And in 1967, Viv made this work for an exhibition at the Waters Gallery in Sydney. And in her own words, it kind of just made her sort of burst into the art world. It was hugely shocking at the time. She had made this image of a vagina dentata, so this aggressive image of a vagina with teeth. And you can look up press reports at the time. The press were absolutely horrified. And she thinks of this work as really just quite a like work that came out of her, not in a very kind of conceptual, considered way. It was just completely sort of an innate response, I guess, at the time. So it's a point to like, you know, a sort of, not the start of these kind of conversations in Australia, but certainly Viv has been a kind of key historical figure in the feminist movement. Go around here and have a look at something. So along this back wall here, we have a work by Sadie Chandler, who's a Melbourne-based artist. And it looks, I guess, upon immediate appearance as if it's wallpaper or one seamless image, but actually each different image is hand-drawn individually and she's pasted and layered them on top of each other to create this backdrop here. The work's called The Weight of Images, so it's referencing, you know, famous, iconic kind of work by predominantly male artists throughout art history. It's kind of serving as a backdrop for this bench here upon which a number of publications are listed, including Lip, which was, you know, an important feminist publication that came out of Melbourne, and then kind of more recent publications as well. So Lives of the Artists, which was a publication that Liz Pooley, who's got a work in Gallery One, was behind in Sydney, and then another one by Desiree Tahiri, who is a younger artist working in Wollongong. So sort of looking at the ongoing importance of print media and publications to feminist discourse. This work behind me is a work by Eugenia Lim, and it was also a new work she had made for the exhibition. So the work comes out of an earlier project that Eugenia made called Women's Work. So I think that if there is kind of continuing concerns from earlier waves of feminism that are still ongoing, it is that of labour. What constitutes labour? What kind of labour is, you know, recognised as worthy of being paid? Where is the place that women work in? So Huge has photographed five women of diverse backgrounds and different professions in the place that they identify as their place of work, and then accompanied it with, I guess, a first-person interview with them, presented as if a book form as well. So it sort of speaks to a history of feminist artists, I guess, like presenting works that are kind of biographical and using photography, and biography together as well. And they're really lovely works that are worth spending some time reading through as well. But this is a very important work within the exhibition that's, I guess, talking to ideas of rape, which is obviously heavy, but kind of has been incredibly important to include in the show. So ideas of domestic violence, violence towards women, ongoing issues surrounding that, which I think we couldn't have, you know, the Me Too movement was a complete example of that. So this is a work by Siobhan Wright, who is an Indigenous artist who came from a legal background. So professionally, she was a lawyer before she was an artist. This is a work called The Rape Contract, and it is a contract that literally was given to a friend of hers who had experienced rape. And over what is quite sort of legal, quite patriarchal, quite sort of dry language, she has hand annotated the real experiences of her friend. So that torch is not great, but there's a few here. So the idea is that, you know, you kind of can have a look over it to reveal the true kind of story of what happened to her. So it's quite an intimate, quite thoughtful, quite a heavy work that looks at, I guess, the patriarchal nature of language as well. So even when there is a law in place that's supposed to protect you, it still doesn't always have your best interests at heart. So two works in here that deal directly with the politics of the gaze. So I spoke a little bit before about the representation of women in film and popular culture, but of course there's the everyday experience of walking down the street and being looked at. So this work here by Linda Walker subverts that in some way. So actually she's looking at turning that gaze around onto male subjects. She herself is present in the work in each of them. You can see the reflection of the artist in the mirrors that are in the works. And then of course, as a viewer, you're also reflected and implicated in this gaze. So the idea is, you know, who's being looked at, who's looking at who has the power when you're looking at one another. That idea is continued in Atong Atem's work here. So Atong is an artist who was a South Sudanese refugee who arrived in Australia as a child. She's now sort of in her early 20s. She's got a photographic practice that really looks at, obviously, the power and the politics of the gaze, but particularly a colonial gaze into Africa. So these works are existing photographs that she's found in collections such as the Smithsonian. They're images that would have been taken by white ethnographers, or colonisers who were going into Africa to take these photographs as records to bring back. She sort of hand-coloured them to, I guess, reinsert herself into those histories, but also to reanimate those into colour to acknowledge that these histories and conversations are still ongoing. This work here behind you is another new commission for the show by Saloti Tuale, who is an artist based in Sydney, and she's of Fijian descent. And the work is really a sort of celebration of her Fijian culture, specifically the kinds of knowledges that are passed down between the women in her family. So she's looking at the way that knowledge is distributed in a very different way in Fiji than it is in the West. And the work is really an homage, as I said, to the women in her family, so to the aunties. So this figure that you can see here is a depiction of her grandmother, who Saloti is sort of saying is this incredibly boss lady, like she just walks out into the ocean with a stick and a, you know, couple of bits of enticing, you know, worms or whatever, and comes back with food that's able to supply the village and the family, you know, with food. So the painting on the wall behind you is a basket, so a typical basket that she might carry these fish home with. And the kind of makeshift elements that you're seeing here are referencing the kitchens of her family in Fiji. There's a video component that is about the dialogues that are shared when Saloti has been cooking with her family. So sort of looking at how that round table references the kitchen table as an intimate gathering space, this again looks at a sort of domestic space, an activity that's done together as a way of passing down knowledge between generations. And the title, which when it translates in English, basically means like shout out to the ladies. So it's really a celebration of the women in her family. And final works in this room here, we have work on this side by Janet Birchall and Jennifer McCamley, who've had a really long engagement in feminist practice. And this work is referencing Valerie Solanas, who several of you may know as a person who infamously shot Andy Warhol, but who also published the Scum Manifesto, which is on the wall over there. Scum standing for Society for Cutting Up Men. So it's one of the most kind of radical, hardcore works in the show that's kind of really come out of a particular point in feminist history. And this last work along the wall here is a work by Elizabeth Gower, who's a Melbourne-based painter who's had, you know, a very long practice in Australia. She kind of made this work quite unintentionally. She has documented every show that she's done, and she realised at a certain point that she also had herself in each of those pictures. So it might be documentation of the final exhibition, or it might have been an image of herself in the studio before the works went out. But she kind of noticed that, you know, it wasn't something she intended to do, but that she was in each of them as well. And so then it became an ongoing compulsion, I guess. So we have, you know, works from the 70s right up to the last image, which is an image of Elizabeth today standing in this exhibition once she'd kind of placed the last work. And she's hand annotated underneath each one who has taken the photographs. So it's also an incredible record of, I guess, the Melbourne art world and the idea of community and network that's happened over a length of time. The very last work is a work by Michaela Dwyer. So Michaela's had like a long, extensive practice as well. Sydney-based artist about to relocate to Melbourne, actually, for a job at RMIT. And it's kind of an expanded painting, a mobile that kind of is about sort of softness. She's had like a long interest in sort of textile and translucency, transparency, and that kind of thing. Does anyone have questions at all?
Great.
Have you received any sort of criticism for the exhibition?
No, not really, actually. I mean, I think we were quite careful in the way that we put the show together. The curatorium itself had everyone came from different backgrounds. Everyone added a different thing into the mix. And we really did ask lots of the artists, you know, as I said, we asked them two questions. So one was like, what is the unfinished business for you today? So we've tried to address that. And I think the openness of the show, things like the round table, also leaves it open-ended so that people can come in and add different narratives to that. Obviously, you can't hope to do something encyclopedic. We're not an institution like the NGV that could have had time and researchers to do something huge. As I said, it was kind of mainly put together in a year. So it's been quite responsive. And the focus also could have been more historical, but the remit of ACCA is really to kind of focus on contemporary and recent work. So the show really kind of does that in dialogue with a couple of key historical works. So it's not to say we won't get criticism. I'm sure there are people that privately have quite a lot of criticism, but so far it's been quite encouraging.
I think it's an excellent exhibition. I'm a bit of a tourist.
Oh, great.
I thought it was amazing what you have this sort of amazing knowledge of each artist's work. So did you have a
real hands-on artist? Yeah, I mean, that when people sort of ask me what kind of curator are you, like I think I spoke at the start about what ACCA is and our focus being on commissioning work and working with temporary exhibitions. You know, I'm not a curator that would work with objects and collections and looking after, maintaining, things like that. I'm really a commissioning curator, so I work directly with artists and it's usually to make new work. So yeah, it's where possible. I mean, this show is huge. It's sort of bigger than what I traditionally like to work. I prefer to have more kind of sustained relationships with fewer artists. This one, yeah, you sort of, I mean, I had to send out 90 contracts. Like, it's just dealing with, like, you know, and getting things here. So sometimes you didn't have always a relationship you would like to. But yeah, hopefully we've asked questions along the way and it's just about kind of trying to remember what their answers are and trying to address it.
Did you find any resistance within, like, ACCA seems pretty progressive to put on something like this. Did you find any resistance within your organisation or any, like, views that people had that you didn't know about to put in this exhibition?
Sure. Well, ACCA's a very small institution. We really have, like, 10 core staff. And the exhibition was on the, like, was the initiative of our artistic director, Max Delaney. So you're never going to receive difficulty when your artistic director is like, let's do this show. And he is one of actually a few, we've got a very female dominated workplace. So it was pretty much full support. I mean, I think that even for myself, I have spent the last kind of 12 months really trying to understand how I define feminism. So I had a really interesting studio visit very early on with a trans artist and I met them in a cafe and they said to me, what kind of feminist are you? And it was intended to be like a little bit challenging. And so I really had to think about that, you know, like, what kind of feminist am I? What does that mean to me? And I still am uncertain about that, but I've kind of come to a point of realizing that uncertainty for me actually is the only way to be, because it means at least I'm open. So I'm not sort of saying this is what feminism is, this is how I understand it. I'm also, well, what does it mean to you and to you and to you, and like, what are the things that I'm not thinking about? So as a curator, I feel like I'm very much also a vessel for artists, and so my understanding of feminism is kind of like my curatorial practice. It's hopefully quite open in that way. I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, I think that, you know, within the staff, like our educators, lots of us have had to think about what the show means to them, because it is a personal thing to teach when you're talking about people's lives. It's not like talking about a painting show or a show that kind of references art history or something else. It's like, it's political and it's personal. So everyone has had to reconcile with it, I think, a little bit. Yeah.
Can I ask, thinking about how the show's intergenerational, yeah, and talking about unfinished business, has there been any thought or discussion about how to preserve or save the discussion that the show's generated into the future?
Well, we've been quite good in recording. So most of our public programs are recorded. All that kind of stuff goes onto our website, where it will be in perpetuity. We've made a catalogue for the show, which will hopefully become like a kind of document that is of importance for time to come. I mean, I think at ACCA, we are a temporary exhibition, so it's very hard to kind of conserve things beyond that. But yeah, we do hope that it's something that will spurn other exhibitions or other conversations, and that maybe will be something that people are talking about in 10 years. But that's up to the public, I think, more than us. Yeah. Well, thank you all for coming, and hope it's kind of left something to think about and to talk about and to digest. And yeah, please come back if you have time, because there's lots of things that I sort of skipped over and there's lots of material to really get stuck into. So,
Annika, if people wanted to get in touch with you to ask any specific questions, yep, is there a way they can do that?
I think Nick has my email address, so it's also on the website. I'm happy for you to be in touch if you want to. Yeah,
great. Thank you. That was Annika Christensen from ACCA speaking about their fabulous exhibition Unfinished Business, Perspectives on Art and Feminism. You can find out more about ACCA via their website, acca.melbourne. That's ACCA.melbourne. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'd love you to review us on iTunes. It does help other people to find out about CardiCast and lets us know we're on the right track. Keep an ear out for more CardiCasts. Check out our website at newcardigan.org for more events. And remember, folks, JFDI.